This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Broadway icon John Cameron Mitchell channels the essence of his glam rock icon, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, for one night only at Arts Centre Melbourne this July. So put on some makeup, turn up the A-track and pull the wig down from the shelf. John Cameron Mitchell, July 10 at Arts Centre Melbourne. Book now. Joy sponsor.
You're listening to a Joy podcast. Joy podcasts provide diverse voices for Australia's LGBTI communities, and it can't be done without your support. Radiothon is on now, so join up, renew, or extend your membership today at joy.org.au and help keep us out loud and proud on Joy 94.9.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
Survey, whatever it is, who knows what it is. What we did to the Aboriginal people during the referendum and how hideous that would be for them, just for the right to vote. And it's a bit of a take a minute to walk in your shoes. And for Aboriginal LGBTIQ people to have to live through this twice, I think is absolutely appalling. So I recognise that. Recognise my own elders, all of you, the elders of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, diversity and sex community, don't you feel fabulous? And I wouldn't be standing here if it wasn't for you, this all wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you, and all the work and all the advocacy that you have done. And it is my absolute pleasure to bring greetings on behalf of the Victorian Government tonight, on behalf of Mr. Foley, Minister for Equality. It's welcome to those who are coming from other parts of Australia, and I'm sitting on the table with some American friends. Welcome to the Equality State. I really hope that you had a fantastic time. I only have one parting request, and I think this is a bit rich, but I'm going to ask anyway. Many of you have worked in advocacy all of your lives. In fact, you're still lobbying me. I had a 90-year-old woman tonight already lobbying me about aged care that won't take her cats. That's a true story, and can I do something about that, and I'll on to it. So you have done advocacy all of your lives, but in this time of the postal survey, we need you now more than ever, because you are resilient, you are signs of hope, and I'm hoping you'll help me by reaching back into the younger generations that are experiencing some of this discrimination for the first time in their lives, and they need to hear your stories.
It's Tuesday the 26th of June. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Tom Morgan. The audio you just heard was of Victoria's Gender and Sexuality Commissioner, Ro Allen, speaking at the Coming Back Out Ball last year, where LGBTI elders and allies came together as elders came back out of the closet, standing tall and celebrating living their queer lives proudly. With the City of Melbourne having approved a $75,000 grant for the ball again this year, the Herald Sun ran an article yesterday citing certain councillors' objections to the event. So tonight we revisit last year's Coming Back Out Ball, as we acknowledge the privileges we have today because of the sacrifice of our LGBT elders, who were never afforded the same rights and comforts. We take you behind the scenes of a clinical trial to combat HIV and find out what it's like when you volunteer to be poked and prodded. And, with entries open for the outstanding LGBTI short story competition, find out how you could be the next big thing in queer creative writing.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au, or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
The Herald Sun has the Coming Back Out ball in their sights, after the City of Melbourne approved a $75,000 grant for the night, celebrating gay elders and honouring the sacrifice they have made to give us the equality we have today. Sitting Councillor Beverly Pinder was cited in an article written by John Masinauskas, saying, "I don't know how many times you come out. Do you come out once, or several times every year? I'm confused about that." With Pinder stating, "With so many other priorities, including childcare and homelessness, I feel that $75,000 for a ball is not good use of ratepayers' money," even though the event was supported by the City of Melbourne. So what is the Coming Back Out Ball, and why is it so important? Now on The Informer, we speak with one of the organisers after last year's Coming Back Out Ball, as well as Catherine Barrett, about the importance of not only supporting and listening to our LGBTI elders, but giving them a space to live their lives as who they are, a luxury that wasn't afforded to many of them.
I think we had the party of the century, quite frankly.
I think you did as well. What was the inspiration behind doing an event like this?
I wanted to create an event that really respected and honoured LGBTI elders and create a celebration for that. Using party as politic, we wanted to actually take over one of the largest civic spaces as a way of honouring people's lived experience. But also the trials and tribulations of the sort of current political time at the moment meant that it was actually quite a powerful experience of coming together as a community and honouring our elders and really using the event as a celebration and a thank you for the work that they've done.
And they have done so much work, haven't they? Because they've created the space that allows us to have the queer world that we have now.
That's correct. And that was what was mentioned in my speech as well. It was through their activism and hard work that I was able to wear high heels, although I am regretting the fact that I did that today.
They were very high.
They're a little bit too high, let's be honest. But thank you, elders, for letting me do that for one night only. But I think also what was really special from that night was that we had 500, you know, over 500 people there, and the elders that had come were from around Victoria, but also interstate as well. We had people travelling from Perth and Brisbane to be there at the event, but each person's lived experience was very, very different.
Yeah.
And we have our pioneers who have really been at the front line, fighting for our rights and privileges. But there are also a lot of people who had literally just, you know, were only just coming into their true sexual, gendered or cultural identity. So the closeting of our community is still happening on different ages throughout people's lives. And I think what was really important was to acknowledge that this is still happening for parts of our community, and the elderly are only just, I suppose, getting through or experience, you know, being able to feel safe about some of the historical discrimination they felt, and also makes a lot of sense for the reasons why some of these people have closeted their identities for so long.
Mm. Here's hoping it's not the last time we have the Coming Back Out Ball. It was amazing, 500 people filling the Melbourne Town Hall. It was just beautiful and a spectacular celebration, so he's hoping there's going to be another one next year.
Yeah, thanks so much for being there and all of your support. It's really greatly appreciated.
Older people are generally speaking more isolated than younger people. We know that from the data. But older LGBTI people are also more likely to have lost family and friends, their biological family and friends, and never to have married and had kids. We know that from the stats as well too. Mm. So if you've lost, if you don't have your family of origin because you came out or transitioned and they ditched you, and your partner's died, then you're more likely to be on your own. So that's why, you know, programs like Switchboard are incredibly important. These other projects that are around building capacity and engaging people.
I guess a lot of us feel, or our understanding of, you know, aged care spaces and everything is it really is just this place where people get shut away, where they don't get to be a part of, you know, what's going on in the world around them. And for LGBTIQ people whose lived experiences is very different to the pathway that is set out in the heteronormative world we have, we've heard a lot about it, especially in the past year, because in the lead up to a lot of the events that have been going on, about LGBTI people having to go back into the closet just for their mental health and for their comfort and safety. And it really does, it's a terrifying thought that that's the space that's gone to them, because they've lived these full lives. Well, but not all of them have at times. Like, some of them have had to, this is the older spectrum of their life is when they're coming out.
I think one of the other things that's happening as part of this too is the very act of listening to our LGBTI elders is incredibly important, because they've been, you know, for many of them, they've had to hide their difference in order to be safe historically. Mm. And as older people, they have been terribly invisible. And so the act of engaging in LGBTI communities, engaging with elders, is about saying, is about recognising that they're here,
yeah,
that, and actually elders in the true sense of the word, that we want to hear your story, we want to learn from you, and that's very respectful.
It actually changed my perspective of who my elders are. There's the space that we have where we're constantly seeing the same faces, the people that are coexisting within the patterns that I live and the patterns that exist within my queer world. And that's, I think, what was so wonderful about an event like that, where it was something completely separate and it was for them and for everyone to experience and hear from them. But it was something that was so crafted for them. And it really opened my eyes to who my elders are and how many more of them there are, and actually how many of them I was interacting with and didn't even realise.
And the most extraordinarily diverse people. My jaw kept dropping. I turned around and see people who had just totally done up and gone the full hog, and people in furs and big hats and corsets, and, you know, people in corsets in their 70s. And yeah, it was just like, wow.
It was absolutely fantastic.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Recommitting funding to honouring our LGBTI elders after the success of last year's event is a wonderful thing. That was Dean Arcuri speaking with Tristan Meacham from the Coming Back Out Ball and Catherine Barrett discussing why it's so important to honour and celebrate our LGBTIQ elders, who paved the way for the equality we have today.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
Have you ever been part of a clinical trial? In order to find a cure for HIV, it means that science and society need to work together. For decades, people living with HIV have been at the centre of trying to find a cure for the disease, with people who are impacted by the disease having been stepping forward and participating in clinical research. There's still a long way to go before an HIV cure becomes a reality, and we need some breakthroughs in the science as well as the testing of people living with HIV. In the early days of the epidemic, when people living with HIV signed up to test potential new drugs and treatments, HIV was a death sentence, and participating in these trials was as much about your own survival as combating the disease worldwide. Today, participating in clinical trials and research surrounding HIV means something a little bit different. The Informer's Ian Muchamore has signed up to participate in a clinical trial, and thanks to the Doherty Institute and their Melbourne Sexual Health Centre, Ian shares with us his experience as part of the VIVA study. The first thing that Ian has to do is meet with clinical nurse Julie Silver, as he takes part in the study which tests if a high dose of vitamin D can affect HIV that impacts the body.
For decades, people living with HIV have been at the centre of trying to find treatments and hopefully a cure for HIV. This can't happen without science, and progress in the science can't happen without people who are impacted stepping forward and being willing to contribute and participate in clinical research. Join me now as I literally go inside an HIV cure clinical study.
Could you just tell me what we're going to do today?
Okay, so this is your baseline visit, or we've randomised you in the study.
Mm-hmm.
So what basically will happen is that we're going to do it just to make sure that you're happy to continue on with the study. We need to do some study-specific tests, like some blood tests. Some of those bloods are standard of care blood, so things like you're checking your kidney and liver, bile load and T-cells. And then there's a whole large volume of blood for the storage samples that are going to be testing all sorts of. Then we're also going to do a urine sample, looking at your health of your kidneys, and also a rectal swab, you know, bacteria. When you have a sexually transmitted infection screen, it's exactly the same. It's not anything different. We're not taking a sample of your gut or anything like that. It's the usual
little cotton bud.
Yeah, it's the usual cotton bud. No different to normal. Yeah, no. So don't get stressed about that. Yeah.
Okay. What would you like me to do first?
Well, do you want to go and do the urine and I might take your blood and then we'll do all the sort of more probably
okay.
administrative.
Right. Well, I'll be back in 5 minutes.
In the early days of HIV, when people signed up to test potential new drugs and treatments, HIV was seen as a death sentence, and participating in these clinical trials was as much about your own survival as combating the disease worldwide. Today, participating in clinical trials and research surrounding HIV means something a little bit different, and I myself have signed up to take part in one. Thanks to the Doherty Institute and the Melbourne Sexual Health Clinic, they're allowing me to share my experience as part of the VIVA study. I'm the guinea pig after all, and the first thing this guinea pig needs to do is to go for my first clinical visit at the Melbourne Sexual Health Clinic to meet clinical research nurse Julie.
And wash my hands.
Hello, it's Julie here from Melbourne Sexual Health Centre. Could I please organise a courier to pick up samples? Melbourne Sexual Health Centre. Going to Doherty Institute. Okay, super. Thanks very much. Bye.
So you book a courier for my samples?
Yeah.
So there's my rectal swab.
Yes.
What do they use that for?
It's bacteria. It's looking at bacterial testing. I think it's like the gut flora.
Mm-hmm.
Which is all linked with all that, you know, health of the gut.
Yeah.
And that's all part of what they're looking at with this cure, things that are hidden away, HIV hidden away in sort of
the gut biome. We hear quite a lot about that. Yeah.
The VIVA study tests whether a high dose of vitamin D can impact HIV that remains hidden in the body. Over the next 6 months, I'll take a single pill in the morning, every morning, and with a follow-up 3 months after that. I don't know whether the pill will be vitamin D or whether it's a placebo, also known as a sugar pill. Why don't we let Sharon Lewin, the director of the Doherty Institute, explain a bit more about this particular study?
In Australia, we have many studies, both observational, meaning understanding where the virus is hiding and why, and interventional, giving someone something to change the situation to see if it can be cured. So vitamin D as a cure for HIV, or what we call the VIVA study, is first of all an interventional study. It is a randomised placebo-controlled study, which is sort of the gold standard or Rolls Royce when you're trying to answer a question, whether what you've given is different to a sugar tablet. This study aims to see whether high-dose vitamin D in people living with HIV on effective antiretroviral therapy can reduce the amount of virus that goes into hiding.
I'm used to getting my bloods taken. It's a routine part of health checkups, and giving a few extra millilitres for use in research to better understand HIV in the body doesn't seem like a huge burden to me. While Julie from Melbourne Sexual Health Clinic was busy taking my bloods, I asked her how she got involved in HIV cure research.
So do you want to give me this arm, okay?
Whichever one.
I used to do clinical, and then that person got sick, so my boss said to me, would you be interested in doing it? And I went, oh yeah, okay. And it was mainly just people coming for STI checks at the clinic there. It operates differently to other sexual health.
And how long ago was that?
A long time ago.
So
back
before...
in the dark ages. It was back in the 90s, early 90s. Open your arm, squeeze a bit. Just feel that.
And back in the day, people with HIV weren't very happy with how clinical trials were taking place. Did you, and they were particularly concerned about placebo trials at the time because, you know, they wanted the drugs.
Yeah. HIV clinical trials, you know, they often got fast-tracked, like drugs got to the market quicker than usual practice probably. And then I moved over here because I'm actually Melbourne born and raised, and so decided I wanted to come back to Melbourne, and so there was a job going here, and then here I've been ever since. So there you go, it's good. So as far as the cure research, so basically here I've done a variety of studies, some mainly sort of either investigator-initiated studies or pharmaceutical-based studies, so a combination, or, you know, and both clinical studies or observational cohorts. In HIV, then STIs.
What sort of people take part?
In the cure?
The cure studies, is it different?
I think individuals with the cures have probably a particular interest in that. Because it's funny, because I know there's a lady, and I've asked her a couple of times, and when she comes in, she always wants to know what's the latest research, is there going to be a cure in that? But then when we offer her to take part in a cure study, she won't take part.
What do you think the barriers are to people taking part? Do you think they just don't understand what research involves?
Well, I think a little bit. And, you know, I think there is an element too that it does require a bit of time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of blood is... We're having a... Your
it's not that much blood.
No, well, that's right.
But if you've got a thing, but if you've got an issue with blood, you probably wouldn't be for you.
No, or if you've got difficult veins and all sorts of things. I don't know. I think some people just don't want to be the first to take part in something in case it has any, you know, there ends up being bad luck or doesn't end well.
But someone has to. And, I mean, this is vitamin D. I don't think taking a vitamin D pill is going to have any nasty side effects. I'm pretty confident of that. You know, nothing's for sure, for sure, but I really don't think that taking a large vitamin D dose is going to have a problem.
I think, put it in perspective.
Sharon was saying to me that some people, there's different generations of people who've taken part in cure research as well. So there's maybe people like me who saw people dying in the 90s and thinking, well, we really need HIV cure. And then there's a younger generation as well.
Look, I think there's different too, because it's funny, because I just ran into a guy in the waiting room who we had in a trial years and years ago, and he's an older gentleman, and I hadn't seen him for a long time, really, probably at least a year, I think, and I had a little bit of a chat to him then, and it's funny, because the perspective of people have changed over the time, and he was sort of asking me, oh, is there any research on, you know, people that have had HIV for, or been on treatment for as long as I have, like it's been on for about 10 years. And I said, oh, look, you know, I'll look at stuff and just see what there is. So there are people that are really interested and keen to know what's best. And sometimes there is this, I think, a little bit of a selfish perspective in a sense that you want to know because then maybe you'll get the best of it.
I think one of the drivers for me is that, yes, I think there's a duty to take part, and we're very lucky to have the drugs that we've got. And I believe in the science, you know, but I think you need to do science like this to know whether something works or not. But also I know that I get lots of extra tests.
Yeah, well, in fact, that was the next thing I was about to say to you, that one of the other reasons that people like to do clinical trials is that you do get a lot of extra tests done that you wouldn't normally get. And also, particularly depending on the nature of the study, tests and investigations and everything are reviewed and checked, like all your results of everything that you're ever having done here with us while you've been on those studies have been, you know, checked and signed off and again reviewed again later. So there's a fair degree of scrutiny.
How many vials of blood have you got
there? There was 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
And it was pretty
under,
easy, wasn't it?
It's just under 90 mils. Well, yeah, I hope it was easy for you.
I wasn't paying attention.
Oh, well,
it just happened.
Oh, how about that gold star for Julie?
Participating in a clinical trial won't be everyone's cup of tea, but the meaningful involvement of people with HIV in research and trials has been a consistent for decades. Trust has been built between community and scientists, and advocacy has changed how modern clinical trials take place.
So, you've got a brown paper bag there.
Yes, brown paper bag. So this is your medication. You need to take, this is the bottle
of
medication.
It's a huge bottle.
Yeah, it's 3 months. There's 100 tablets in there. But the appointments will be when we see you again and you'll get another lot of tablets. So one a day.
Right.
In the morning. It's also best to take it to help the absorption of the vitamin D with, like, say, a cup of milk, like, in the morning with breakfast, if you do eat breakfast. Let's pop them in the bag. Any questions about this?
No. So I take the first one tomorrow morning with breakfast.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Many thanks to Julie for chatting to me her busy day at Melbourne Sexual Health Clinic, and also to Sharon Lewin and the Doherty Institute for supporting us in accessing an inside view of what it's like being involved in an HIV cure trial, what it looks like and what it sounds like.
That was Ian Muchamore with clinical nurse Julie Silver, going behind the scenes of a clinical trial to find a cure for HIV.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Do you know what the next big thing is? Applications are now open for Australia's premier LGBTI creative writing comp, the Outstanding LGBTI Short Story Competition, giving an opportunity to share experiences from around the country. Dean Arcuri spoke to Teresa Savage to find out more.
The Outstanding Short Story Competition actually has been going in many different iterations without that name for years and years and years. It was originally, it's been part of Mardi Gras, you know, a short story event. It was originally curated by a small committee under the umbrella of Gay eBooks. Then it became a Mardi Gras short story competition for several years. And then in 2013, with the blessing of Mardi Gras, we relaunched it at Pride because it was getting a bit lost in the Mardi Gras program. So we decided to move the time of year, and we now launch at Pride, and we launch with a new name, Outstanding. And Alex Greenwich, who's the member for Sydney, is our patron, and he gives us great support. And we're funded at the moment by Aurora, the Aurora Foundation, and supported by many, many other groups.
How short or long? How long should a short story be?
So ours is anything up to 750 words. It has to somewhere or other, it has to relate to the LGBTIQ community in some way. That's pretty broad, isn't it?
That's very broad.
Yep. And it also has to relate to the theme in some way. And this year's theme is the next big thing. It's 750 words. The deadline is midnight on the 1st of September this year. There's an online submission process. It's free to enter, and that's something that's very, very important to us. We've managed to maintain free entry, unlike lots of other story competitions, because to us it's really important that people who, you know, may not have much money but who, you know, who are creative can join in with us, join in with our community of writers.
As themes go, next big thing, I mean, it's the next big thing is actually an important conversation that's been going on within our communities ever since the marriage equality debate ended.
That's right.
But that's not a theme that's not just about looking to the future or looking at the best important thing. The beauty of short stories and creative writing is it can mean a lot of different things. Why was that the theme that was decided upon?
Every year we try to choose a theme that we think will stimulate interesting writing, that explores our experience as LGBTI people, that express, you know, gives scope to express our creativity and ways of interpreting. So we try to find something that we think many people will relate to and will be able to think about, and without predetermining it too much, so that not, you know, everything isn't about the one subject. So, you know, the next big thing could be that gorgeous woman who walks through your door, couldn't it? You know, it could be the next big political campaign. You know, we're hoping that it can be interpreted like that.
The reach for this is all across Australia and New Zealand, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes. And we administer it from Sydney, but our new committee member actually is based in Perth, so we're truly going across the wide brown land, and yes, we accept submissions from people in New Zealand.
Why is it important for us to hear from so many, to hear stories from people from all around our country and the world?
I think there's still an issue with our experience, our lessons learned, our creativity, our descriptions of the multiple ways in which we live and love differently to the mainstream. I think it's really important that we have environments where people are free to express those ideas. That to us is really, really important. Storytelling, being able to tell the stories of our lives, legitimates our lives in many ways. And I think the other thing is that for people who may be isolated, reading stories of our experience is often really, really important. I don't know about you, but when I was very, very young, you know, and just struggling and thinking about my own sexuality, the library was an incredibly important place, not just because it was often a haven of peace compared to the rest of school, but also because you could find out things. You could realize that you weren't the only person in the world who felt like this. You know, there were other people. And I think that's a really important function of what we've been doing. And just in the last year or two, we've gone into partnership with 2010, which is the young people's organisation here in Sydney, and we've done some writing workshops to really, really encourage young people to get involved. And we now have, the last 2 years, we've had a youth prize, a special youth prize for people under 25.
That was Dean Arcuri speaking with Teresa Savage from the Outstanding LGBTI Short Story Competition. If you have a story or idea you'd like to write, head to outstandingstories.net for more details. Entries close Saturday, September 1st.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
And that's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you'd like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Tom Morgan.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.